Now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Brian P. from San Diego.
Damn, it's a lot of people in here. I'm a little nervous. I mean, real nervous. I just feel like I got to take a shit right now. My name is Brian. I am an alcoholic. Thanks to my higher power, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you people, I have another day of continuous sobriety. I don't know about you, but I'm going to tell you a few things about me, and I'm going to tell you exactly how this program worked for me. And I'm confident it can work for you also. I've been drinking and getting loaded since I was 15, so all I know is drinking and getting loaded. And I did that for so long that I have 9 years sober, and I have a lot of years of drinking and getting loaded. So which one do I really know how to do? I know how to drink and get loaded and fuck things up. But I never gave life an opportunity to show up that I can drink to escape my problems, because when I started using drinking at 15, I didn't have any problems. Regardless of what some people think, everybody doesn't start drinking and using because they're trying to escape problems. I was 15. I just wanted to experiment and have fun. And repetitiously, eventually addiction kicked in. So my whole problem all my life has been drinking and using. As my sponsor alluded to, there are five things that I must do. And he told me this. He said, you got to go to meetings, have a high power, get a sponsor, work the steps, and do service work. He told me, he said, if you do those five things, Brian, I guarantee you'll get sober. And if you continue to do them, you'll stay sober. So those are the five things that I'm going to talk about, because those are the five things that got me sober, and those are the five things that keep me sober. So the first thing I want to talk about is meetings. Don't underestimate the power of meetings, because the meetings is the foundation of my recovery, because I learned everything in a meeting. See, I learned the indicated next step by being in a meeting. I learned about the steps and the sponsor. I learned about everything from being in a meeting. February 1st, 2008, I woke up in an empty car because I was homeless. I didn't have a pot to piss in, and I had to go see my probation officer. And the only reason I went to go see my probation officer is because every time I got arrested for absconding, because I never reported. And the only reason I went to go see my probation officer is not because I wanted to be this model citizen and get my shit together. It's just I got tired of my drinking and using getting interrupted. Because every time I got arrested, I was on one. That obsession of the mind was on, or the phenomenon of craving was on my ass. And I always got arrested. And I hated being in the back of the police car getting separated from drugs and alcohol. I hated that feeling. So the only reason I went to go see my probation officer is so my drinking and using wouldn't get interrupted. So I went to go see my probation officer. I hopped on a bus. I asked the bus driver to allow me to go downtown. And when I went to my probation officer, he handed me a piss cup. Now, I'm an addict and alcoholic, plus I come from one of those communities where I know how to use honesty as a form of manipulation. So I said, you know what? I really want some help. I'm homeless. I didn't want any help. I just didn't want him to violate me on a dirty piss test that I was getting ready to give him. So he said, you know what, Brian? He went in his office for about 3 hours, and I know he was calling the police on me, but he didn't. He came out. He said, I got you in the VOA. You're going to be at the VOA for 15 days. And in 15 days, this guy named Ben is going to come and pick you up and take you to this place called VVSD. And I was like, damn. Because I really didn't want to go. So, and because I do other drugs, when I say alcohol, substitute it for whatever I'm saying alcohol is for the format of this meeting. When I say bottle, think about pipe, because I did it all. It's just for the format and respect of the meeting, I'm going to say alcohol and bottle. So when I went to his office, I still had a bottle on me because I had no intentions of getting sober. But he said, you got to go to this detox program, you got to go right now. And I said, you know what? I need to go back and get my clothes, because this is on a Friday. That's when my sobriety... This is why my sobriety birthday isn't until February 2nd, because this is on February 1st, and I didn't have 24 hours sober and clean until February 2nd. Don't forget, I'm homeless. I don't have a pot to piss in. Everything I had was already on me. I just didn't want my weekend to stop. So I went down. I started walking because the VOA was downtown, like Park and Market downtown. So I went from Broadway to the courthouse, and I'm walking. I'm like, damn. And I'm just like, you know what? It's downtown. Let me get in here, give me something to eat, rest for a few days, and then I'm going to go downtown in the bottom, so I'm just going to continue doing what I always do. So I went in this detox program, and I didn't know that they was going to wake us up 2 and 3 times a day, and these happy-ass people from H&I were going to come in and share their experience, strength, and hope. See, I'm a product of H&I. I got introduced to this process and this program through H&I. If it wasn't for H&I, I wouldn't be here. So if you do H&I, you never know who you might save or who you might, who life might give them a glimmer of hope, because I'm a product of H&I. And there's one guy named Greg who goes to a meeting where my sponsor was. I still remember him being on the H&I panel. And every time I share, every time I go up my sponsor and take a token, he always comes up to me and cries because he remembered, because I always give him the credit. Man, thank you for helping save my life. Now, when these people from H&I come in, I really don't want to go to the meeting, but you have to get up and go to the H&I meeting. It was doing 2 and 3 times a day. So I'm like, damn, I'm sleeping some of them. I'm not wanting to be there. But on the 4th day of listening to these people from H&I, something took place up in here. Something transpired where I started thinking, damn, if it happened for them, it just might be able to happen for me also. So I was in the bathroom and I had my apparatus on me, because I told you I drink and I get loaded. So whatever I had on me in the bathroom, I wrapped it up. I stepped on it and I threw it in the garbage can. I didn't know what I was going to do. I'm like, when I'm in the bathroom, I'm like, God, I don't know what to do. But these people got me believing that if they do it, I might be able to do it also. So I threw my apparatus in the trash can, and I haven't had to go to the 99-cent store in 9 years to buy a fucking another one as a direct result of this process. So I got introduced to this process through H&I, which is a meeting. So that's why I love going to meetings. And then after 15 days, this guy named Ben came and picked me up and took me to VVSD. So I had 15 days. When I got to VVSD, I had 15 days sober. And when I went to VVSD, that's when I started seeing people take tokens. And when I was in a meeting and I seen somebody take a 30-day token, I was like, damn, in 2 weeks, I'll be able to take a 30-day token. See, meetings motivate me. Meetings inspire me, because I'm seeing people always talking about overcoming. I'm always hearing people talk about the solution. I'm always hearing people talk about overcoming something. That's why it's hard for me to go to a meeting where all they're doing is bitching and complaining. I'll get pissed off when I go to a meeting like that. So I go to a meeting where I'm always hearing the solution, because that motivates and inspires me. So when I seen that person take a 30-day token, I'm like, damn, I can do it also. And when I was going to meetings, this guy right here used to come back to VVSD and pick up people who were on restriction, because when you're in the first 30 days, you can't go anywhere. And Peter used to pick people up and take us out to go to meetings. And so he was picking us up as soon as I got there. He always came on a Tuesday and a Thursday to take us, on Thursday, I think, to take us somewhere. But he always came on Tuesday to speak at the men's meeting. And I remember he took me out. He took us to PB, to a meeting. And I must have said something he didn't like, or he knew that this dude is pretty fucked up, so I need to say something to him when we get back to VVSD. So after the meeting, he said, do you have a sponsor? I was like, no. And I know in the meetings is where I learned to get a sponsor, where I learned to do the steps, where I learned about service work. And I knew that I needed to get a sponsor, but I was still kind of nervous about getting a sponsor. And everybody at VVSD, the residents, hated Peter D. So when he came up to me after the meeting, he said, do you have a sponsor? See, I didn't even ask him to be my sponsor. He said, do you have a sponsor? I said, no. He looked at me, he said, I'm your fucking sponsor, and you better fucking like it. And I was like, okay. Because the community is where I'm from, that cockiness and that arrogance sometimes is what you latch on to. And he's real cocky and confident about this process. When it comes to recovery and doing that, he's an asshole. Outside of the rooms, he's the nicest person you ever want to meet. But in these rooms, he's a straight asshole. Don't be talking. Don't be making no noise. Sit up in the front. That's how he is. But Peter came up to me and said, I'm going to be your sponsor, and you better fucking like it. So my whole foundation is based on going to meetings, because that's what started the paradigm shift, because I was hopeless when I got here. I had tried to stop drinking when I was out there, but every time I said I was going to stop, I never stopped. Every time I said I'm going to go to bed and wake up with some money in my pocket to get me a burrito, it never worked. That obsession of the mind kicked in and said, let's go get one more. And that one more turned into all night. Actually, I know how I got my felonies now. After I read the doctor's opinion and I learned about powerlessness, and I learned that when a thought comes to my mind, I have the inability not to go drink and use. And then when I drink and use, I have the inability to stop, because the phenomenon of craving kicked in. That means I'm fucked. But now I know how I really got in trouble. See, the obsession of the mind is how I got my misdemeanors. When the thought came, I'll go panhandle, I'll go do something to get started. But once I got started and the phenomenal craving kicked in, the phenomenal craving is how I got my felonies. Because when that monkey is on you, you're willing to do whatever it takes to get that next one. So I know how to separate. If I don't drink and use, the phenomenal craving will never kick in. I don't misunderstand that. I understand that it's the obsession of the mind and the allergy of the body. And the allergy of the body, the phenomenon of craving only kicks in as a direct result of drinking and using. If I don't drink and use, the phenomenon of craving would never kick in. Doesn't mean the thought might not come to my mind, but the phenomenon of craving would never kick in. And the phenomenon of craving hasn't kicked in because the only solution for an alcoholic like me is total abstinence. And I learned that in these rooms. So once I got the VVSD and I got Peter and I'm going to these meetings, there have been times when I was having pity parties for myself, and I don't go to a meeting for 2 weeks. I'm pissed off because when I got here, I was like a five-time felon, and every time I get hired, when the background check come back, I will get fired. And I would call my sponsor crying and getting pissed off, and I'm mad. He said, "Brian, you got hired, right?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Who you are today got you hired. Who you were then got your ass fired." But it's been times when I don't go to a meeting and there's something on the inside of you that once you start going to a meeting and once you start working this process, there's something on the inside of you that may tug you and like, you need to get your butt to a meeting. So after 2 weeks of not going to a meeting on several occasions because I'm pissed off at the meeting, I'm just pissed off. I'm not pissed off at anybody, but I don't want to do a damn thing, right? I go to a meeting and all of a sudden, I don't hear anybody talking about what I'm going through. I don't hear anybody talking about any solution, about any similarities of what I'm going through. But the simple fact that I went through to a meeting helped my mind go from pessimistic to optimistic. But when I leave there, I'm thinking, let me hold on just a little bit longer. Let me try just a little bit longer. Because even when you're feeling down and out, you go to a meeting, there's something about hearing people share that, yes, God can, if you just hold on a little bit longer. Stay with the process and God is going to come through for you. So the meetings is the foundation of all of my recovery because everything that I have today was built on going to meetings. And I think that's one of my competitive advantages is I love going to meetings. And also I learned that the majority, my sponsor, I was at a meeting and my sponsor had a pen and piece of paper. He gave me a pen and piece of paper. And he had me go around to everybody in that meeting who had relapsed and ask them what were they doing before they relapsed and what happened. So I'm walking around with a pen because I'm still at VVSD. I'm walking around with a pen, and I'm going up to people. And everybody that said they relapsed, everybody had the same story. The first thing they said they stopped doing was going to meetings. That was the first thing they said. I stopped going to meetings. So if I threw my apparatus away because H&I came in and that motivated me, if I got inspired because I seen a person take a 30-day token, if I don't go to a meeting for 2 weeks, then I go to a meeting and all of a sudden the paradigm shift starts all over again. I go from pessimistic to optimistic. Something is telling me that I need to go to meetings. So I go to meetings on a regular basis, and by going to meetings, by going to the same meeting on a regular basis, is how I built up that support network, my support group, my foundation, my fellowship. And it's going to be times when you're going to need a fellowship because things in life pop up. No matter how much faith I've had, no matter how much my belief in God is, things in life just happen. But because I kept going to the meeting, one meeting in particular, on a regular basis, people got to know me. I became friends with people. I have a support group. And there have been times when I've wanted to get loaded, I wanted to drink. My sponsor didn't answer the phone, and my sponsor told me to make sure you go out and you get your phone numbers. And at one meeting, he told me to go around and ask people for their phone numbers. But again, if it wasn't for the meetings, I would have never learned about a sponsor, learned about the steps, and learned about everything else. So when I got that foundation, I got this fellowship. When those times when my sponsor didn't answer and that glimmer, that little bit of obsession was on me, I was able to call somebody because I have a daughter, and I never knew what baby mama drama was until I had my own daughter. And my daughter she just turned 4 in March, right? And my baby mama drama was intense, right? And all kind of negative thoughts used to go through my mind. And I used to call this fellowship 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night. I used to call Peter early in the morning. I'm crying. I'm pissed off. And that fellowship said, it'll be okay. Because it's been times when I was so weak, when my daughter's mother tried to take my daughter from me, I was so weak that the fellowship held me up when I couldn't hold myself up. I was calling people late at night. I was crying at people. People was willing to take me out. People, after the meetings, people were taking me out. And my sponsor, I love him to death. If I need my sponsor is the type of person, if I call him, if I really need him, he will hop his ass up and come and see about me. And I know that 100%. That's why I love him to this day, because that is my dog, right? So meetings is the foundation of all of my recovery. So I love going to meetings. So don't underestimate the power of going to meetings, because meetings started my recovery. Meetings helped my recovery when I felt stagnant, and meetings is still the motivating factor of when I go there and I hear, and I'm going through something, or things ain't working out, I want to start my own business, it ain't working, shit ain't going right. In a meeting, you'll always hear somebody say how they overcome, or they always talk about the solution. So don't underestimate the power of a meeting. The second thing my sponsor told me I had to do was get a higher power. Now, that one was going to be difficult, because when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was pissed off at God. I'm from North Carolina, so I was raised in the church. That's all you know, is going to church. But since I started drinking and using at 15, for like a couple years, I fell off. But I started back going to church around my 11th grade year, the January of my 11th grade year, going into my senior year. So I started going to church and I stopped drinking and using. Now I'm going to church, I'm back in school, I'm getting my grades right enough to graduate. So now I got all this, God is everything. I got this faith. And I remember one time my mother had this bill, and the lights were, because I'm from the projects, man, and times were rough. My mother had this light bill, and the lights were supposed to get cut off on that Friday. It was on a Friday. I came home from school. She said, Brian, the lights might get cut off. But I'm in church. I don't drink it no more. I got all this faith. I touched it just like, you know what I'm saying, in the name of Jesus and all this. But that night, the lights didn't get cut off. Saturday, they didn't cut off. Sunday, they were still on. Monday, my mother got the money to pay the bill. And when she went down there to pay the bill, she said, the lights were supposed to get cut off. She said, they were, and down at the, it wasn't SDG&E, but it was Pacific something back in North Carolina. They said it was supposed to get cut off. They said, but on Friday, the system went down. Now, can you imagine how I feel? I just prayed. I just said, in the name of Jesus. So I'm excited about God. I'm excited about church. I'm excited about faith. I mean, I'm just, can't nobody tell. I know this faith thing works. I graduated high school June 3rd, 1993. But my daddy died when I was in the fifth grade. I inherited $16,873 in March. But I couldn't cash it until April when I turned 18. I was graduating that June. So for a whole month in the projects, I sat with a check for $16,873 under my pillow. When I turned 18, I cashed it, gave my mom some money, went and got me a car. Now I got a car. I'm graduating high school, and June comes. June 3rd, 1993, I graduate. I walk across the aisle. And in my community, a lot of you all start off in school, but by the time you graduate, it's only a handful of you. And I was one of the handful. My mother seen me graduate. She was screaming my name. She was yelling. She was excited. I'm in church. I'm not drinking. I'm not using. I mean, it's like the best time of my life. My excitement, my love for God, and all that shit was up here. The very next day, I was supposed to go to Virginia Beach. I take my car to the shop. You know how you get your tires rotated, make sure you're ready to go on the road. I take my car to the shop, and I come home. And in the projects, you might use your back door like your front door. And I see my clothes in the dryer, because that night, my mother said, Brian, I'm going to wash your clothes tonight on June 3rd. You go out, have fun with your friends because you graduated. She said, in the morning, when you take your car to the shop, I'm going to get up and put your clothes in the dryer. So when I come in the back door and I see my clothes in the dryer, I'm like, shit, it's a good day. I'm getting ready to pack my clothes and go to Virginia. I walk in the living room, and I find my mother dead in the middle of the fucking floor. From that day forward, resentments against God, resentments against life, even resentments against my dead mother went to a peak that I didn't even know. Man, the demons and the evil that was in me came up so much, I didn't even know the shit was fucking possible. So for me to believe in God again, when I know I'm going to church, I'm doing the right thing, and I got this faith, and something still bad still happens like this, I didn't know she was sick. And when I went to the hospital, the doctor said, Brian, you want to do an autopsy? And I'm 18 years old, and I said no. I wish I would have said yeah, because it still haunts me, because I really don't know what happened. don't know if somebody strangled, I don't know if she got choked. But my sister said she probably had diabetes, and so I try to hold on to that to give myself a little more peace of mind than thinking that somebody did something while I was gone. But I always remember that she got up and she washed the clothes. So from that day forward, man, I was so angry at God. And the last thing you want to hear, like 2 weeks after graduating high school, I'm sitting across the desk from the funeral director, and he teaching me what casket is the best casket to bury my mother in. Shit was fucked up. And I had a brother in Atlanta, a sister in Detroit. They come because I inherited some money. All the responsibility lies on me. Man, I was pissed. And the last thing you want to hear, which even fueled my resentment, is these religious-ass people, when something bad happens, they say, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. What the fuck you mean? That was my mom. God knows what he's doing. I don't understand. I need to know what the hell he's doing. I need to know what's going on. So from that day forward, I was pissed off. 3 months later, I'm drinking and smoking. 6 months later, I'm homeless again. I got to do something, so I decided to run to the military. I run to the military, and I'm a alcoholic to the 10th power. No matter what community I am, I can tell if it's some happenings in that community. There's something on the inside of me that goes off to say, this neighborhood might have what you want. You know how some people have a gaydar if they're gay, some people have a radar. I have a crackdar. No matter what community I'm in, it'll go off and tell me it's some round here somewhere. So I ran to the military to escape. Not because I wanted to be this patriot dude. I ran to the military to escape, thinking that if I go to the military, something different is going to happen. One of my favorite quotes is from Einstein. Einstein says, you can't solve a problem with the same mind and way of thinking that created that problem. Now I know I can't solve my drinking and getting high problem with the same mind and thinking that created my drinking and getting high problem. So I thought if I ran to the military, the geographical change would do it, but it didn't. 6 months after being here, I'm smoking and drinking. 18 months after being in the military, I get kicked out because I pop on a piss test. 6 months after getting out of the military, I'm in Long Park Federal Penitentiary. Shit just go bad real quick. So when I come here, now, on my journey, I'm still wanting to have this relationship with God because it's embedded in me. I'm conditioned to believe in something. And as I started growing, I started doing my own research. There are certain things that I no longer agree with, some things I do agree with, but there is a God that I wanted to have business, I wanted to do business with. There's a way that I wanted to believe, but I was scared to believe because in the back of my mind, I'm thinking if I choose this way, something bad going to happen to me. If I choose this God, it's going to be a different God, and I'm going to go to this invisible place called hell, and I'm going to be burning the rest of my damn life. That's scary as hell. I don't want to be burning the rest of my life. So it's these things that I wanted to believe in, but it was hard for me to grasp it with this fear and people and hearing people say that all this other negative stuff. One thing I love about Alcoholics Anonymous, no one in Alcoholics Anonymous has ever asked me, what do you believe in? What's the name of your God? What is the synagogue? What is the church? Or what is the worship place that you go to? No one has ever asked me that. They said, if you have a high power and it's working for you, keep using them. And that's the best thing that could happen to me. So when I came here and I started going through these steps with my sponsor, and he said, I can have the God of my own understanding. That is exactly what I needed to hear. Because the way that I thought about God, and for me to have so much faith in being in church and something bad still happen, it let me know that bad things can happen. But I learned that I never had a problem with God. I had a problem with all of you all's interpretation of God. The audacity of people to think they have a monopoly on God. But when I came around here, you all said I can have the God of my own understanding. That's what emotionally freed me up enough that I could do this process. Because if I had to have a God with the ideology, dogma, and creed that I resented, I probably couldn't have did this. So when I was able to get the God of my own understanding, that I don't have to defend in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have to argue with in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what gave me the emotional freedom to stay around here. So now that I'm going to meetings and I got this God that I can finally do business with, now my life is really starting to go because I'm going to meetings, I got this God, and I got this dude named Peter D. barking in my ear. You know, you're going to do these steps. You're going to do these steps. You're going to change. You're going to be part of what is called the Crybaby Club. You remember he said the Crybaby Club up here? He said I was going to be a part of the Crybaby Club when I worked these steps. I'll be damned. Now I'm a part of what is called the Crybaby Club because now I don't have the alcohol and the other stuff to suppress my emotions, and I'm so emotional today. Man, have you all ever seen Undercover Boss? Yeah. It's good until at the end when they started giving people shit. Damn. I mean, a tearjerker for real, right? So I be watching all this stuff, and I be getting excited, and I'm crying in the bed by myself, you know what I mean? And it's because I'm so happy today that I'm not mad at myself, I'm not mad at God anymore, and I'm not mad at my mother, because I hated God and my dead mother from 1993 to 2008. So if I can hate God and my dead mother for 18 years, that means I can hate the average motherfucker forever. That means I have to stay in 10, 11, and 12, or anything can happen. So I got this sponsor, man, and I'm so excited. He barking in my ear. And when my mother died, it was hard for me to get close to people. And it's still kind of difficult. I had different girlfriends because I'm scared to get close, because I don't want that pain, to feel that pain. If something happened, they mess around, they die, any damn thing, because I know life shows up. So I don't want to get too close to people. So I'd rather bounce from one person to the next than instead of stick and stay. When it came to this process and Peter, I was scared to have friends as well, because I'm thinking, what if they stab me in the back? All because of what happened to me. Psychologically, when you have bad stuff happen to you, it messes you up. But this process has allowed me to trust a little bit more, and it allows me to open up a little bit more. And I have a girl now who been off and on, but this last year I'm like, man, I'm going to try it. I'm going to stick. Verbally go back and forth, but I hadn't left. And this is the longest time I've been like this forever. Plus, I got this old school sponsor, and it's like damn near 90, and he always talking about. You know, he's old school from New York, so he's always about family and sticking and staying. So I'm really trying. That's why for me to have the fellowship and the friends that I have today is amazing. And it's only through Alcoholics Anonymous that is allowing me to trust this fellowship. And Peter's the closest. My father died when I was fifth grade, so Peter's like the closest thing to a father. So like if something happened to Peter, I would lose my fucking mind. And I know that. You know what I'm saying? That's why I got to have a fellowship. I got to have other people. But one thing about having Peter, I remember Peter, you know how some people, you get a sponsor, you have to call them for like 30 days, 60 days. I had to call Peter every day for a year. Like, who does that, right? And one day, I missed 2 days in a row. I was at VVSD. He came to VVSD. He said, I was sitting in his car. He loves Cadillacs. He had a Cadillac there. I'm sitting in his car, and he said, you missed 2 days. I said, yeah. He said, he looked at me. He was on the driver's side. He looked at me, he said, if you miss 3 days in a row, you find you another motherfucking sponsor. God. Damn. I mean, straight. So for a whole year, I never missed 3 days. I used to test them. I would go for two. But I never missed 3 days in a row. And Peter used to tell me to call him every day, but now I'm on the hindsight, it's 2020. But one of the reasons that I've learned to call Peter, because my first 30 days off restriction, so if I had 15 days at the detox and I got 30 days at VVSD, now when I go off my restriction, I got 45 days. I'm walking from VVSD and I'm walking to the Washington trolley to go downtown. And I get like two blocks away and this guy come around the corner and say, hey man, you looking? Now where I'm from, when you say, hey man, you looking? That means you know where to go get some stuff at. I said, I just came around. I said, nah, I'm good. And so I walk and I get on the trolley. Now, as I started going downtown, now that physiological effect kicking in. My mouth getting watery, my stomach bubbling. I got to shit. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm on my way downtown, and downtown is where I did a lot of my dirt. But when I got out off the trolley, man, I can't believe it. When I got off the trolley, there was like six people from VVSD standing right there looking at me when I got off the trolley, and they wasn't waiting on anyone. That was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, because I don't know what would have happened. They took me to a meeting. We went up and got a book and went home. And I told Peter that like a couple days later. He said, why didn't you call me? He said, when that was happening, why didn't you call me? And I was like, I don't know. I ain't think about it. He said, that's why I told you to call me every day. because you'll get in the habit of calling someone when something pop off, when something in your mind, or you get some bright idea, you'll be in the habit of calling someone. I'm like, damn. Now, it was a madness. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It was, what's the word I'm looking for?
Method.
It was a method. Thank you. It was a method to his madness. It was a method to his madness, but I didn't understand it at the time. Peter helped nourish me. The meetings helped nourish me. The fellowship helped nourish me. And having a God of my own understanding helped nourish me. So now I got high power. I go to meetings. I got a high power, and I'm working. I got a sponsor. And now we're going through these steps. And I'm so glad for the doctor's opinion, man, because I was so like, why can't I stop? Why can't somebody else drink and put it down or take one? And they're able to say, man, I got to go to work. And I'm not going to work once I start, right? Don't forget, I'm homeless, so I don't even want a house. I don't want an apartment. I don't want anything. I just want that next one. And I was so grateful when they said, you have an allergy of the body. It gave me the reason, like, okay, that's my problem. That phenomena of craving, because the obsession of the mind, if I drink and use all the time, of course, all I'm going to think about is drinking and using. If I stop drinking and using and get some sobriety time, I'm not going to think about drinking and using. And the phenomena of craving only kicks in once I pick up that first one. And I'm so grateful that I understand that, because I understand that if a person is allergic to bees, if they may break out in hives or whatever allergic reaction they might have, but if they don't get stung for 20 years, it doesn't mean they're not allergic to bees. It means they just haven't gotten stung. So just because I haven't drank and picked up in 9 years doesn't mean that I don't have that allergy. And I'm convinced of that. That's why I'll never be able to go out here and say, let me try it, and it's going to be different. I know it ain't going to be different, because I understand that phenomenon of craving and that allergic reaction is always going to be there. So I stick and stay with this process. So when we start going through these steps and made the decision to turn my will and my life over to that care of that God, as I understand him now, it became a lot easier, because I don't have to wake up every single day and say, God, what is your will for me? If you have to do that according to the God of your understanding, that's what you have to do. But I don't have to do that according to the God of my understanding, because my understanding of the God, what I understand about the God that I have is, Brian, my will is that you be spiritually responsible with the free will that I already gave you. See, that eliminates a lot of things in my path, because if I'm spiritually responsible, I'm going to eliminate some of the consequences that I'm used to having. I'm going to eliminate some of the pitfalls that I'm used to going into. So I don't have to wake up every day and say, God, what is your will for me? I just got to wake up and follow the spiritual will that Alcoholics Anonymous gave to me. And that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous, man. They're not into ideology, dogma, and creed. They're into the spiritual principles. And I've noticed, I've looked at different religions, and all of them say the same thing when it comes to faith, love, hope, charity. They all say the exact same thing. When you get to the ideology, the dogma, the creeds, the characters, then the shit gets different. And that's what I love about this program, because it's teaching me how to think and it's teaching me how to live instead of what character to believe in. One of the hardest things I had to do is make amends. And one of the things I had to do make amends to is for myself, to God, and my dead mother, because I was pissed off. So I forgave my mother, because what if she didn't want to tell me she was sick if she was sick? If she knew that I was drinking, if she knew I was already an alcoholic, what does she think? If she would have told me, I probably wouldn't have graduated high school, because she knew I would have lost my mind way ahead of time. And now that I know that I never had a resentment against God, I had a resentment against everyone else's interpretation of God. So now I'm able to forgive God, because I know it wasn't him. It was all you all problem telling me how I need to think or how I need to feel about God. But Alcoholics Anonymous said, no, you can have the God of your own understanding. And when I did my fourth step, it allowed me to man up and take responsibility of my thinking and my action and my behaviors. And even some of the things where it wasn't my part in it initially, it still became my part in it about how I responded to the situation. Because even if I didn't have any part in the initial whatever it was, my reaction, which is a lot of time negative, still fueled whatever it was. And now I'm involved in it because I'm reacting to it negatively. But one of the best revelations I've had in step four was when I was at the sober living one time, and I'm sitting there and I'm talking and I'm thinking about God. And one of the best revelations came to me. See, I never heard a voice. I never seen no burning bush. My God talks to me is that when a thought comes to my mind, it raises my awareness. And I feel this strong conviction right here that wherever my awareness is raised to is my truth. See, I don't know about your truth. I can tell you about my truth. And the best revelation I've ever had is when that thought, when the thought came to my mind and said, Brian, you can't put all the responsibility on God. You got to get your ass up and do something. And when you fuck up and you fake and you got and you have consequences, you can't blame everything on this invisible ghost called the devil either. Sooner or later, you got to take responsibilities for your thinking and your actions, which leaves no wiggle room to complain or blame people, places, and things for your situation and your condition. And without the ability to complain or blame, there's an emotional freedom now. I have an emotional freedom now that I've never had before because I'm not walking around angry at the system. I'm not walking around angry at white folks for putting a dope in my community, putting an alcoholic sign up in my community. Man, I don't like black folks just like I don't like some white folks. That's just the way it is. And it's funny, when I was homeless, and I mean, it's funny how liberal I was when I was homeless and I had my hand out, asking everybody for a handout. It's crazy, once I started working and I looked at my taxes, I got conservative like a motherfucker, right? I'm like, they taking out this much for who? They need to get off their ass, you know what I'm saying? So now, because I want my money, right? So it's funny how this program would change you, right? So I'm going through these steps, and I'm changing my life around. And one time, man, I had to make amends to this girl. I made amends to her. And sometimes making amends can bring out more stuff. I remember I made amends to this girl back in 2010. And she said, okay, I ain't seen you in a while. I'm going to take you out to eat. And I said, I want to make amends. And then she all of a sudden, she was looking, she was like, huh. She said, let me ask you something, since you're making amends, right? Have you ever stole from me? I'm like, damn it, I just made amends. Why you want to go deeper? So I was like, yeah, I did. She said, I blamed it on my brother. I told my brother he can. I was like, well, that's what it was, right? And this is for all you men, man. Don't underestimate the power of making amends, right? Because after the amends, I think I had a car. I went back to this house where I was scared. She stayed over. She spent the night, slept with me. Things happen. So for you men, making amends can get you laid. So don't underestimate. Don't underestimate the power of making amends. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. Right? So now I'm going through this process, man. I'm feeling emotionally free. I'm going to meetings. I got a God in my understanding. I got a sponsor who has my back 100%, and I'm working the steps. And then I started doing service work. When I had 6 months sober, I went with my sponsor back to the VOA, the same place where my recovery started. He took me there when I had 6 months sober because in the other fellowship, which we worked the 12 steps out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, he took me with him, and I had 6 months, and I was doing a meeting, and after the meeting, he said, you know what? He said, my time is up here. He said, you want it? I'm like, he said, you can do it. I said, yeah, I ain't have a car. But while I was at VVSD, I was catching the bus going to do H&I at the same place that I started from, which was the VOA. And 9 years later, I'm still doing H&I every first Saturday of the month at the fucking VOA. Because I started at the VOA. H&I brought the message to me in a meeting at the VOA. It gave me hope, so I continuously go back to try to get hope to somebody else. So don't underestimate this program. This program is a beautiful thing. I also was going inside the jails, and when you see somebody get out of jail, and they say, man, I remember you, and they start going to the meetings, and there's this one guy said, man, I remember you, and I want to change. When I see him get out, I see him go to meetings, and now he just wrote a poetry book, right? And it's pretty good. He gave it to me, and he wrote it to me, and, you know, he put his little paragraph and his little signature. He get out, and all of a sudden, he get hooked up with Stedman, who was Oprah Winfrey's boyfriend, and now he's going to be going around to different schools talking. And it feels good when somebody get out and say, man, I remember you. Thanks for coming and sharing your experience with the hope. That's why I love H&I. I'd rather do H&I than sponsor. But I sponsor just because I had one, and he'll say some shit if I don't. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I do what I do. But this program has changed my life. I love this program. And I always close in one thing, but before I close one thing, I know this is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, but just for the record, did anybody in here get high besides me? Anybody here? Okay. So I always close the way I always close to let you know how fucking sick I really am, right? When you're a fourth waiver, they can search you at any moment, at any time, for anything without your permission because you waived your Fourth Amendment rights. I was in East San Diego in the alley, and I had some dope on me, right? And the cops finna come up, and I put it in my mouth, and I swallow it. They search me, and they gone. Now, they gone. Now, I want my dope that's in me to come up out of me so I can smoke it. I don't want to go back across the street to panhandle. Why need to panhandle and get more money when I already got dope on the inside of me? I just need to fucking throw up, right? But I'm panicking so much that the thought of putting my finger down my throat doesn't even come to my mind. A smart person would have thought of that. When it comes to drinking and getting loaded, I am beyond smart. I am a dumb rock, right? So I'm looking around in the alleys, and I'm willing to swallow anything except some dick to make myself throw up. So I'm looking around in the alleys, and all of a sudden I see some dog shit. The first thing to come to my mind is, Brian, you take a piece of that dog shit, you swallow it, you're going to throw up, and you're going to get your dope back. An insane person would have said, man, that is dumb. When it comes to drinking and getting loaded, I am beyond insane. First thing came to my mind, that sounds like a bright idea. So I take a piece of that dog shit, I swallow it, I'm dry heaving, and the shit don't work. Now I'm mad as hell, right? My dope is melting. I just ate some dog shit. The average person would have said, you know what? Fuck it. Let me go panhandle. But when it comes to getting loaded, I am beyond insane. The thing that came to my mind was, you already did it one time. You might as well do it again. I take another piece of that dog shit. I swallow it. I start throwing up. I'm on my hands and knees, and I'm looking through my throw up for my dope. And I find my 220s. I dried them off. I put them on my pipe, and I smoked it. So there are a lot of reasons I don't drink and smoke dope, but one of the reasons I don't drink and smoke dope is because I know if I drink and smoke dope, there's a possibility I might eat some dog shit. Thanks for allowing me to share.